Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
School of Humans.
Please note that this episode discusses physical and sexual abuse. And another note, lots of the audio in this episode is from 30-year-old deposition hearings. The rest was recorded from phone calls with someone incarcerated. So, warning that parts of this are a little hard to hear. In 1979, in Los Angeles, two men, Jesse James Andrews and Charles Sanders, stood at the door of Preston Wheeler's apartment. Preston was home with his girlfriend, Patrice Brandon, and when they saw the two men outside, they invited them in. They weren't expecting trouble. After all, Preston, a small-time drug dealer, and Jesse were friendly. But Jesse and Charles were not there as friends. According to Charles, Jesse tied Preston and Patrice up while the two of them ransacked the apartment, looking for money and drugs and valuables. When they didn't find anything worthwhile, Jesse raped and strangled Patrice to death with a hanger before sodomizing and murdering Preston. A neighbor, Ronald Chisholm, having heard a commotion, went to make sure that Preston was okay. Charles later testified that Jesse invited Ronald in and then strangled him in the bathtub. Jesse and Charles went about a year before being caught. Charles was arrested first and agreed to testify against Jesse in exchange for a reduced sentence. Jesse was ultimately arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced to death. You hear about a crime like this, and you think, how could someone do this? What is it about them that would make them do something this brutal, this cruel, this evil? The answer requires us to go back 15 years before that triple murder, back to 1964, when Jesse James Andrews, age 13, was sent to Mount Meigs. When I first got the email about Mount Meigs, I was horrified by the story and what the kids went through. But there was one particular part that stuck with me that made me feel like I had to tell this story. Not what Mount Meigs did to children, but how it changed the trajectory of those children's lives once they became adults. We've told you the stories of some of them. Jenny Knox, Mary Stevens, Johnny Bodley, and Lonnie Holly. We've told you about how they came to Mount Meigs, scared and alone, how they learned to adapt, how they suffered. So it may sound strange to say this, but in many ways, Jenny, Mary, Johnny, and Lonnie were the lucky ones. Lucky, despite the fact that they're still haunted by what happened to them, even though they're now in their 60s and 70s. But many people who were incarcerated at Mount Meigs as children ended up spending their entire lives tethered to the criminal legal system. Many were sentenced to life in prison. Many others were sentenced to death. I'm Josie Duffy Rice, and this is Unreformed, the story of the Alabama Industrial School for Negro Children. Episode 7, The Aftermath. Jesse James Andrews went to trial and was sentenced to death via gas chamber in 1984. But a few years later, he appealed, arguing that his attorneys hadn't presented mitigating evidence. When a defendant is facing a possible death sentence, they're allowed to present evidence that could convince the jury that a life sentence would be more appropriate. The evidence could include many things: developmental delays, remorse, age, or childhood trauma. Jesse wanted to tell the court about Mount Meigs. For his appeal, Jesse's lawyers wanted to talk to others who knew Jesse when he was at Mount Meigs. In total, 32 former Mount Meigs students sat for depositions. Every single one of them had spent significant time in adult prison.
The date is Thursday, April 6, 1995.
Could you state your name again for the record, please?
Johnny McNeil. Okay.
Richard Eberlake Jr.
Oliver Clifton Wheatley.
Vernon Madison.
Chesney Rain.
Roseway Up Young Love.
Willis Spencer.
You solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
And Mr. Rains, you're presently incarcerated or in custody of the Alabama prison system?
That's right.
Could you tell me where you were raised?
Well, practically in prison. Most of my life, I've been about 27, 28 years. You know, Mount Meigs and here.
It's been 30 years since those depositions. We reached out to all the people who were deposed who are still living, most of whom are still in prison. We only heard back from one person.
This is a prepaid collect call from an incarcerated individual at Alabama Department of Corrections. This call is not private. It will be recorded and may be monitored. You may start the conversation now.
Okay. My name is Johnny Mack.
This is Johnny Mack Young. Not to be confused with Johnny Bodley, who you've also heard from. Today, Johnny Mack is 73. He's at the St. Clair Correctional Facility in Springville, Alabama. Johnny Mack's life parallels Jesse's in many ways. They come from the same part of Alabama. As children, they were both sent to Mount Meigs. And as adults, both were sentenced to prison for murder.
I'm one of the most violent persons that you would ever have met in your life. And those characteristics was instilled in me when I was a 12, 13-year-old child in Mount Meigs Reformatory.
Johnny Mack was born in a small town called Pritchard, Alabama. Pritchard was very segregated. Johnny Mack says he didn't even meet a white person until he was 7. Like many of the other survivors we've heard from, Johnny Mack was one of several siblings. But he was closest to his older sister, Rose, and his brother, James.
Rose would go to school. When she came home, she forced us to learn how to write. She forced us to learn how to read.
With Rose's help, Johnny Mack was pretty good at school. He liked reading and math. But by age 12, he was starting to get into trouble.
If I had listened to Rose, you know, life would have been a whole lot different.
But instead of listening to his sister, Johnny Mack says he started running in the streets. He kept running away from home and playing hooky from school until eventually he was declared incorrigible and sent to Mount Meigs. He got there around the same time as Lonnie. And his stories about his time there echo the ones we heard from everyone else. Like the physical violence.
You fight or you whoop.
Then there was the sexual violence.
They will make a woman out of you.
Being forced to work in the fields from dawn to dusk.
The roads were so long that you could look so far and then you could see the curves in the earth like the roads dropping off the earth.
Mr. Glover's beating stick, which Glover named John Henry.
Speak to John Henry. Call Mr. John Henry. Tell Mr. John Henry, don't you fall so hard.
even attempting to run away multiple times.
Man, I'll take every chance I get.
After attempting to escape six times, Johnny Mack stopped running away once he discovered the consequences. Johnny Mack was an Ike. That was slang for the tough guys. He says that at Mount Meigs, you had to be on guard all of the time.
You can trust nobody. You can have friends, but you can trust nobody.
On April 5th, 1968, the day after Martin Luther King was killed, Robert Kennedy gave a speech called On the Mindless Menace of Violence, where he talked about the cowardice of the bullet, like the one that had ended King's life and would end his own just 2 months later. But he mentioned another kind of violence, too, which he called, quote, slower but just as deadly, destructive as the shot or the bomb in the night. This is the violence of institutions, indifference and inaction and slow decay. This is the violence that afflicts the poor, that poisons relations between men because their skin has different colors. It was the institutional violence at Mount Meigs that led to the harm that many of its former residents would later commit. And this is part of the legacy of Mount Meigs, too. What the institution did to those children, even when they weren't children anymore. People like Johnny Mack Young and Jesse James Andrews. In 1964, a new student arrived at Mount Meigs, a kid named Jesse James Andrews. The same Jesse who, 20 years later, would be sentenced to death for triple homicide. Johnny Mack took notice of him, since the two boys were from the same area in Alabama. The first thing that stood out about Jesse is that he was small. Johnny Mack described him as passive, soft, weak. New arrivals were always subject to some hazing, but it was worse for the ones they called scrubs, kids like Jesse, the guys who were easily preyed upon, the ones Johnny Bodley described as suckers. Guys like that, the vulnerable ones, they stood out like sore thumbs at Mount Meigs. Vulnerability put a target on your back, and right away, Jesse caught their attention. Even years later, the other kids remembered how much more abuse he endured than most.
From what you observed during the time when you and Jesse were both at Mount Meigs, was Jesse treated any better than any of the other kids there?
In my opinion, I would say he was treated a little bit worse because of his size.
You know, like for me knowing Jesse and looking at him, I hate to say, you know, he has a very feminine look about himself. So I said, hey, you're going to have a hard time.
You remember actually seeing Mr. Glover hit Jesse with a bullwhip?
Yes.
Did you ever see Jesse hit at the morning bench?
I seen him get whooped at the morning bench.
Jesse was assaulted and tortured, not just by the staff, but by other kids. He was a laughingstock, a frequent punching bag, and an even more frequent rape victim. Johnny Mack says that he and some others taught Jesse how to fight, but the way they did that was by beating him themselves.
One of the things that we did was we like passed on the rules and, you know, like a code of conduct, teach him how to survive.
Okay, what was the code of conduct?
Well, you only let nobody do nothing to you to get away, and you ain't never show signs of weaknesses.
Johnny Mack and Jesse were released from Mount Meigs in the mid-1960s. They'd cross paths many years later under very different circumstances. But as kids leaving Mount Meigs, thrown out to fend for themselves, they'd had a certain mentality instilled in them. Hurt them before they hurt you. Trust nobody, and never show weakness.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
At age 15, Johnny Mack was released from Mount Meigs. He found himself with no money and no help, and he ended up in a small town where he broke into a grocery store.
That's how I wound up going to jail.
Just a month after he left Mount Meigs, Johnny Mack was locked up once again. This time, he was sent to the adult jail.
I'm 15 years old. How many guys there with these grown-ass men? They all big and swole up because they be doing push-ups and all this, right? And I'm a child.
Back then, there were often kids in adult correctional facilities. And that's still the case today. This is one of the many unimaginable elements of our criminal justice system, shoving children into adult prisons and jails to fend for themselves. Given his years at Mount Meigs, some of the most brutal parts of jail were familiar to Johnny Mack. He told us a story about a time when he beat an older inmate with a metal lunch tray.
I hit him with the corner of the tray upside his head, right? And knocked him down.
Johnny Mack went to trial for this assault. He was convicted and sentenced to 3 years in Atmore Prison, a notoriously terrible adult penitentiary in Alabama. Jesse James Andrews was also sent to Atmore. That triple homicide that Jesse committed, it turns out it wasn't his first time being charged with murder. Just 3 months after he left Mount Meigs, in the wake of the abuse and torture, he was implicated in another killing, though he didn't pull the trigger. He was only 15 years old. Johnny Mack got out of Atmore at 18 and moved up north. Over the next several years, he was in and out of various correctional facilities in different states across the country. In New Jersey, he was charged with multiple counts of assault and robbery. He also has a record in Ohio. But Johnny Mack even said in those depositions from the 90s, that Mount Meigs was worse than any prison he went to as an adult.
What would you say the level of violence was at Mount Meigs, if any?
At the particular time, Mount Meigs was rougher than the prison institutions. You had to be tough, you know.
The event that brought him back home to Alabama was a theft gone wrong. In the 1980s, Johnny Mack was living in New Jersey and started robbing local drug dealers with a woman named Candy. One night, the people Candy and Johnny Mack planned to rob had been tipped off that they were coming. A shootout ensued.
My girl Candy, she had an automatic shotgun.
Johnny Mack hid behind a couch, and Candy came in the back door with her automatic shotgun. She gave cover for Johnny Mack to grab the drugs and cash and run out the back. He was grazed with a bullet on his way out. Candy ran out the front and straight into the police, who arrested her and hauled her off to jail. But Johnny Mack escaped, and he fled back home to Alabama. When Johnny Mack got to Alabama, he ended up back near Pritchard in Mobile County, where he was born.
I started selling drugs and a whole lot of other stuff, right?
He had a whole drug operation run out of two buildings hidden away outside Mobile. He was making good money. And in a way, he was settling down. He started dating a woman who had kids, and they all moved in together in a house up on a hill in a community called 8 Mile. Johnny Mack was stepping in as a father figure.
Well, I treated all the kids like they were my own, like I would want a father to treat me.
He loved them as if they were his own, he said. Especially the youngest daughter, who he'd take around with him everywhere. He started boxing when he lived in New Jersey, so he'd take her to the gym with him, or out whenever he was running errands for the home. But Johnny Mack was still hustling, selling drugs, still had that Mount Meigs mentality instilled in him. Then he met another woman, one much younger than him. She was in an altercation with a guy who worked with Johnny Mack's operation. She ended up shooting at the guy, and when he tried to retaliate, Johnny Mack stepped in and knocked him out. Johnny Mack was impressed by this woman's zeal. He described her as a gangster. So even though he had his family on the hill, he started seeing this new woman, too. But soon after, Johnny Mack discovered she was stealing money from him, money that he says he needed to support his family.
You ain't taking my money, you're taking money out of my baby's mouth.
He was furious. According to Johnny Mack, he told her she better not come around him anymore. But he says she stole from him one more time.
Man, she came back, stole my money, I killed him.
The Alabama Department of Corrections classification summary for Johnny Mack reads, shot and killed female victim who was 2 months pregnant. Johnny Mack was in his 30s when he was convicted. He's been in prison for 36 years. He is serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole, which means he will die in a place where he has spent most of his life, an Alabama prison.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Johnny Mack Young was sentenced to life without parole in 1986. By the mid-1990s, he had escaped from prisons in Alabama several times and had racked up dozens of serious disciplinary infractions.
When I came to prison, I still had that Mount Meigs attitude.
That's when Johnny Mack heard that Jesse had committed three murders in California. The story he heard was slightly different than what's in the legal documents. He heard that Jesse was with two other guys, not just Charles.
I had another homeboy was in Mount Meigs, went out to California and killed somebody. The killing was so heinous that my other two homeboys ran out of the building and left him in there and then told on him. And he wound up getting on death row.
Johnny Mack remembered just how much violence Jesse had been forced to endure. So he and another prisoner who knew Jesse wrote to Jesse's lawyers.
We write the lawyers of California, and we tell them to listen. This is why the man did this. And then we told him about my own marriage.
Now, Johnny Mack wasn't writing the lawyers solely out of the goodness of his heart. He told us that he was hoping that Jesse's lawyers would bring him out to California for an official statement. He thought that'd give him plenty of opportunities to escape. To secure his runaway plan, Johnny Mack was trying to be as helpful as possible to Jesse's lawyers, even finding more inmates for them to talk to.
We gave him too many names.
But unfortunately for Johnny Mack, Jesse's lawyers found so many former Mount Meigs students incarcerated in the Alabama prison system alone that instead of bringing everyone to California, the lawyers decided to come south. They talked to those 32 inmates in prisons around Alabama, at facilities like Kilby, St. Clair, Donaldson, Elmore, and Holman, where people on death row are imprisoned.
How would you describe the effect that Mount Meigs had on you?
Well, I tell you one thing, it put a lot of fear, it had me mad with the world. It just had me messed up. I had a chip on my shoulder.
It put so much anger and hate inside of you until when given a chance, it's like saying, all of a sudden you run through the woods and you was a rabbit, and next thing you know, you come up and you're a wolf. So you want to hunt you some rabbits too.
You know, you filled me with a lot of hate. You couldn't help nothing but the hate, the way they treated you down there. We was being treated worse than dogs, man. And everybody, most of the guys that I was there with, I met them in prison.
Most everybody you knew at Mount Meigs you later saw in prison?
Yes, sir.
Would you say that your experience at Mount Meigs had anything to do with your convictions for violent offenses later in life?
Yes, because like Mount Meigs gave me the foundation for everything that I am. All that I am now is a product of Mount Meigs. All that I ever be will always be a product of Mount Meigs.
There's no question that Jesse did something unspeakably horrible when he killed Preston Wheeler, Patrice Brandon, and Ronald Chisholm. And yet, if there was ever legitimate mitigating evidence, his time at Mount Meigs would seem to qualify. And if his experience wasn't enough, 32 other people testified under oath about what they had gone through, how it changed them, and what they had seen Jesse endure. But the court wasn't convinced. In 2002, the Supreme Court of California upheld Jesse's death row sentence. It wasn't until a subsequent appeal, in 2009, that the court recognized the traumatic impact of what Jesse had endured. His death sentence was overturned, and he was resentenced to life without parole. Jesse James Andrews is still alive today. After years in the infamous San Quentin prison in California, he is now at the California Healthcare Facility, which houses many elderly incarcerated people with chronic health conditions. We reached out to him and his lawyers, but we didn't hear back. Jesse and Johnny Mack aren't the only former Mount Meigs kids to be convicted of murder. There's Sam Howard, Kevin Hawker. There's Roosevelt Youngblood, once the longest-serving prisoner in Alabama. There are men who left Mount Meigs and committed murder within months, when they were still just kids. There are people whose names we're keeping private because they're still appealing their sentences. And there are hundreds more, people who endured so much cruelty at Mount Meigs as children, and then inflicted serious violent harm on others once they got out. They went to an institution where violence was a constant, eat or be eaten, where they were being abused, being forced to abuse others, or both.
In Mount Meigs, they teach you how to be a better thief, or a better killer, or a better rapist. Mount Meigs turned guys into murderers.
That's the other Johnny, Johnny Bodley.
When I got out of Mount Meigs, I had a killing mentality. If someone did anything to me, I would have killed them. That's the attitude I left with.
And if things had gone just a little differently, he too could have easily ended up on death row or serving a life sentence. He told us about one moment when he was living in Boston where he could see just how much the violence and abuse at Mount Meigs had affected him.
I was in Boston, you know, and I went into this store. So I went into the dress room with this big baggy pair of pants on, and I put about three or four pair under the baggy pair. And then I attempted to walk out. So when I walked out the door, an alarm went off. And so when the alarm went off, I started running, and this white guy started chasing me. If the white guy had caught me, I would have killed him.
Johnny told us that almost all of his friends from Mount Meigs are now either dead or in prison. Jenny's former crush, the boy on the tractor, is currently on death row in Alabama. In the almost 40 years he's been locked up, Johnny Mack has encountered dozens of former Mount Meigs kids within the prison walls.
Everybody that was in Mount Meigs with me, they either dead, death row in some other state, but they all got in common that they done raped somebody and they done killed at least one human being. This is the way we learn how to live. This is the behavior we came up with.
I keep thinking about something Superintendent E.B. Holloway said in 1970, right before he retired. This was 3 months after a federal court ordered Mount Meigs to implement reforms, and just one day after U.S. Attorney Ira DeMint told a local paper that he was considering prosecuting Holloway for child abuse. Holloway said that when he came to work at Mount Meigs 23 years before, they didn't send him to teachers or therapists or social workers to learn about child welfare. Instead, he said, they sent me to Kilby. Kilby, by the way, is one of the worst adult prisons in Alabama. Holloway continued, I tried to do what they wanted done. If I hadn't, I wouldn't have been here 23 years. The question they always asked was, how many bales of cotton have you made? And never, how many children have you helped? It's tempting to think of Mount Meigs as the failure of cruel individuals. Holloway, Fanny Matthews, and countless others. But the truth is that the failure was much bigger than that. It's the thing Robert Kennedy was talking about, the violence of institutions. Institutions that not only inflicted violence, but instilled it.
Why would the conditions at these institutions make a first-class criminal?
Because one is influenced by his environment.
That second voice is Ira DeMint, the lawyer turned prosecutor turned judge who represented Denny and the kids from Mount Meigs in the 1969 lawsuit. Ira died in 2008, but he was also deposed in the mid-1990s for Jesse James Andrews' appeal.
Do you think, based on your knowledge of these juvenile institutions, that someone subjected to those conditions can be influenced in a negative way?
Absolutely. Totally. You know, I'll give you a perfect example. I have a 110-pound Rottweiler. He's a gentle giant. You would take the same dog from being a puppy and turn him into a ferocious, vicious dog. So I am totally sold on the proposition that how you treat someone greatly influences his or her behavior.
My friend Rachel said something similar, that people who go on to inflict some of the worst harms almost always had serious trauma in their childhoods. You may remember her from episode 1. She and I went to law school together, and now she lives in Montgomery, where she's worked with both people serving life sentences for crimes they committed as juveniles and people on death row. Early on, I called her to talk about Mount Meigs. I asked her about her clients, many of whom have been accused of committing serious violent harm.
How often is that, have they experienced childhood trauma, would you say, in your experience?
I mean, it sounds too neat, but every single time, yeah. Absolutely, one for one, I sort of end up looking at people, the arc of people's lives, retrospectively, and kind of studying and coming to understand how they ended up on a place like death row, how they ended up sort of mm-hmm. being the most cast off of all people in our society. And so, you know, I notice a lot of patterns, and one of them is this contact with the juvenile justice system.
And Rachel said something I hadn't really thought about, that many of the kids at Mount Meigs must have felt betrayed.
I think every single one of my clients who was arrested as a juvenile has some deep wound that they're nursing about the way that they feel misled, or they felt attacked, or they felt abandoned by the law and by figures of authority. And that is just something that I can't imagine them ever really forgetting or recovering from. But I also just see how that level of betrayal could just sort of completely realign your understanding of the world. I now know in my heart that nobody does something violent or abusive unless it is something that has been shown to them or that they've been subjected to. Whatever they've been accused of or whatever they've perpetuated is an expression of something that they've been through.
Some of the tragedy of Mount Meigs is scientific. We know a lot more now about how abuse affects the brain and the harmful effect of trauma on children. We know that our brains aren't fully developed until our mid-20s. We know about the negative impact exposure to violence can have on young kids. The kids who were sent to Mount Meigs were victimized by the institution, but they weren't the only victims. Preston and Patrice and Ronald were also victims of Mount Meigs. The pregnant woman Johnny Mack shot was a victim of Mount Meigs. And it's not just them, but their families and their loved ones who paid the price for the harm that the school inflicted. In other words, Mount Meigs harmed more than just the kids. It harmed those who those kids went on to hurt. So much lost time, so much grief, so much unrealized love and joy. When I started researching Mount Meigs, I told an acquaintance about the institution and what it did to children. He shrugged, looked unfazed. "It's hard to control violent kids," he told me. They were violent kids, weren't they? Why else would they have been there to begin with? His argument was that Mount Meigs didn't shape these kids. They shaped Mount Meigs. I thought about that conversation when I found this document from the 1950s about a report that J.R. Wingfield, the former superintendent, sent to the governor. In it, he said that lots of the kids at Mount Meigs were there for laziness and loitering. The people we've talked to went in for similar things, things like truancy or being out past curfew or petty theft or running away. Many went in for the crime of having no parents and nowhere else to go. Jesse James Andrews went in for joyriding. Look, even if these kids had shown some inclination for violence, even if they had committed very serious crimes, Mount Meigs would still have been a terrible place to send them. What all kids need is guidance, safety, and help. No child or person is rehabilitated by being stuck in a factory of abuse. These kids weren't monsters. They were shaped by what they endured, what they were forced to see. And that's what makes the history of this institution even more devastating. In the next episode, the last of this series, we're going to look at how former students like Johnny Mack still cope with their experience, and what's become of Mount Meigs today. Unreformed, the story of the Alabama Industrial School for Negro Children, is a production of School of Humans and iHeartMedia. This episode was written by me, Josie Duffy Rice, and Taylor Von Lasley. Our script supervisor is Florence Burrow Adams, and our producer is Gabby Watts. We had additional writing and production support from Sherry Scott. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Elsie Crowley, Brandon Barr, Matt Arnett, and me. Sound design and mix is by Jesse Neiswanger. Music is by Ben Soley. Additional recordings are courtesy of the Alabama Center for Traditional Culture. Special thanks to the Alabama Department of Archives and History, Michael Harriet, Floyd Hall, Kevin Nutt, Van Newkirk, and all of the survivors of Mount Meigs willing to share their stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you or someone you know attended Mount Meigs and would like to be in contact, please email mountmeigspodcast@gmail.com. That's mtmeigspodcast@gmail.com.
School of Humans.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.